You're listening to the Embrace Family Recovery Podcast, a place for real conversations with people who love someone with the disease of addiction. Now here is your host, Margaret Swift Thompson.
Welcome back to episode 31. Today, Jerry returns and shares more about the resources out there for children whose family includes the disease of addiction. Let's get back to Jerry.
The Embrace Family Recovery Podcast.
Are there access points to Beamer or other materials that you would recommend for parents to understand more about the impact on their children? Is there anything out there that you personally will recommend to caregivers to start learning about the impact?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. So if you go to the Hazelden Betty Ford website and go to children's programs, you'll see Beamer. Beamer will be there. You'll get a chance to see Beamer and get a chance to see more of our program philosophy and the ways that we work with kids. If anybody's listening and they have younger kids, the children's program and myself, we have been collaborating. It's been over 18 months now with Sesame Street.
I love this. I'm so glad you're sharing. This is one of the most exciting things. Tell them more.
Yeah. So, and there is a brand new Muppet, and she's just adorable. She's lime green with blonde pigtails, and her name is Carly. And the backstory is Carly is 6.5 years old, and mom is just about to come home from treatment. And so what some of my staff got to do is really help to develop this. I mean, Sesame Street does everything in a first-class kind of way.
Amen.
Talk about being child-centered. Talk about helping and reaching kids. My goodness, they're the gold standard. And so we partnered and I got to work on the scripts. You'll see a series of videos. You'll see Carly with Elmo and for the first time talking about mom having a problem. And it's interesting because that first video, the word addiction isn't mentioned at all. And what Carly said was, you know, my mom has this grown-up problem. She's just not taking care of herself. Now she's learning how to do that. So a nice entree.
With Elmo and that first vignette, because I've watched them all, because as I say, I'm a bit of a geek fan over this children's program. What I loved about the language in that was the permission to speak without necessarily going too deep, the willingness to have language, because I hear on the treatment side when I was working at Hazel and Betty Ford, parents not knowing what to say to their children about being in treatment would say, oh, they're at a hospital. And then the kids are looking for white coats and they're scared because this going to mean death because all they hear is COVID and what people are dying in hospital. And, you know, all the language is so powerful. And that language of what you just shared of her mom getting well, learning to get well and care for herself is such fabulous language to teach for when you face that choice of going to treatment, how to talk to your children about it.
Yeah. I was on the set of Sesame Street when we filmed. So there I am in Astoria, Queens, New York. And the other thing about that video was it was very nuanced, but having Carly be able to start sharing it and be really scared and nervous about what kind of a response am I going to get from Elmo or Chris, who works at Mr. Hooper's store, that's also in the scene.
Right.
And so really tentative and nervous. And then when they respond in a favorable way, how she started to get excited when she talked about going to her own group. So really the subtleties and the layers there, just incredibly well done. And,
yes.
And real briefly, so there'll be other videos there that you could see. There's a storybook that we worked on that, you know what, that I give to folks that are in treatment and have young kids as a way, let's send this home. Or like you say, Maggie, people, and not just people in treatment, but parents and grandparents not knowing the words, is going to that website and showing that, lending a hand, that piece is called, and just showing that and having that be, again, the entry point to jump off of. But there's also, and this is how we got connected to it to begin with, there's also just a wonderful activity called the Seven Seas. And you can make a quilt online in all different colors and stuff and actually print it out. And there's a couple of different articles there. So just really well done. And it has been years since anyone with this particular age group has really created, you know, what turns out to be a very rich plethora of resources. Because you're right, I think adults get so concerned about, how do I say this? And from my point of view, as a therapist, it's how do you tell them enough to validate what they already know without giving them too much to confuse and overwhelm them? And I'll give you a great example.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So I met with the dad in treatment here at the Betty Ford Center a couple months ago, and he had a 4 and a 5-year-old. And so we met because they were concerned, where's dad? You know, and again, often if I don't know what to say, I'm not going to say anything. And what became clear, Maggie, was the boys didn't really know about his drinking. I think that was very reasonable. So they didn't see the alcohol, but in this particular case, they saw the ism.
Right.
You know, and so dad was on the couch a lot. Dad wasn't playing with them. And so the way we framed it, I mean, what I always tell people to say to little kids is that you're at school right now. You're going to school.
Totally.
You know, you got teachers, you got homework, you even do PE every day, you eat in the cafeteria. And so in this particular case, not only did the dad say that, but he said, let me tell you what I'm studying at school. I'm studying how to be a better dad, because when I come home, I want to play with you. The whole family benefited from that explanation. So how do we keep it simple? But I want to validate what kids already know, or they're thinking, you're not telling me the whole deal here. What else is there? And occasionally I'll do, and again, during the pandemic, you get real creative. And so in some instances, where I'm sitting right now, there'll be a patient in the chair. I'll be kneeling right next to them, and we'll get the kids on the phone, or we'll do a Zoom call. And I'll say, you know, I'm one of your dad's teachers. And I did that a few weeks ago. And the 9-year-old girl, because then you can see them, and there's something about being able to see people. 9-year-old girl said, how is he doing? Is he behaving? And I said, well, I'm glad you brought that up.
Uh-huh.
Because I think most of the time he's behaving, but I'm watching him very closely. You know, which she just giggled with delight. So
I also loved about the Sesame Street, the young lady whose personal story is wrapped into all of the puppet stories.
Celia.
Oh, what a young woman. What a little girl. She was just fabulous. And is that something that continues in all of them that she's a part of?
Well, she was a part of that focus because here she is as another kid. And Celia's story, and if you go to the website, you'll see Celia with Carly, but you'll also see a segment of Celia with her parents, especially with her mother. And they live in Orange County, so they're not far from here. And I think, again, it's that message of hope. People do get better. People go to treatment, people get well, people get their families back, people move on in their lives. March 13th, 2020, I was supposed to be honored at a dinner, and it was canceled the day before. I mean, because, you know, the pandemic just hit, and all of a sudden, our governor in California said, we can't have a crowd of more than 250 people. I think there were going to be like 400 people there. And this ties into Celia, because what we had worked out was Celia was going to be there, and Celia was going to talk about me and invite me to come up on the stage. And so I hope when all this is over, we still get to do that. She's an incredible young woman, I guess. Now, I can't call her a little kid anymore. But she's also the embodiment. Look what happens when we have services specific for kids. But yeah, they worked it out. And they said, who would you like to introduce? Oh, Celia's got to introduce me.
This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Can you relate to what you're hearing? Never miss a show by hitting the subscribe button. Now back to the show.
Perfect that a child would introduce you, or a young person, because you've touched so many children. I mean, we love you as adults, but it's different.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So, Jerry, obviously there is hope, and we want people to know there's hope and there's healing and help. But you also have very difficult circumstances, as we all do, because this disease is progressive, chronic, and potentially fatal. So do you experience, probably a very dumb question, children who come back to you and there are tragedies, and resources for that part of the story? Because that is a big part of the story.
Sure. And it happens all the time. You know, one of the things, Maggie, that I hadn't mentioned is that, after kids go through that 4-day process or that 2-day virtual now, we do a stage 2 program and a stage 3 program. So kids can come back for a second look to reinforce the messages when it's not pandemic times. Stage 2 is 2 days just for kids. And in virtual, it's 3 hours just for kids. And we hear all the time about there's relapses. My parent is incarcerated. Mom has some serious mental health challenges going on. Or here's some of the things that have happened. And so it's not atypical for us to have kids go back through our 4-day program a couple of times between 7 and 12, because there are different points in their life with different issues in their family. And then we're always looking at how do we partner with other wonderful children's services? So if someone has passed away, is there a practitioner, is there a program around loss and grief? Or sometimes, kids will come and what we'll see is, boy, they've experienced a huge amount of trauma. Maybe they need to be in individual therapy, or maybe there needs to be family therapy. So it looks like all of those things. And even when we do continuing care, it's open-ended, come and go. So we might not see a family for 6, 7, 8 months. And some challenges come up again, rear their ugly head. Boom, they're right back. Because they know they can come back and do that. So,
and what does continuing care look like after someone goes through the children's program?
What continuing care looks like, it's, we'll have typically a group for 7, 8, 9-year-olds, meets for an hour, one evening a week. There'll be a group for 10, 11, 12-year-olds. We'll take our teens that went through the children's program, and we'll partner, and we'll have a couple of Alateen sponsors come in, and they'll do an Alateen meeting. And then where I'm often at, taking my professional hat off, is for all of the caregivers, for all of the grownups, there'll be an Al-Anon meeting at the same time, but Al-Anon meeting with a real focus on parenting. We call Wednesday evening kids nights. And so getting everybody involved and part of the process. So people will come and go.
Are you able to do that virtually, or is that something that's in person?
We do virtual continuing care. It's Wednesday evenings. And now we're having kids, if it were here at the Betty Ford Center, we'd have local kids. And now virtual continuing care is we have kids from Canada. We've got kids from Florida. And so the reach is greater. And again, a teen group, 7, 8, 9-year-olds in a group, 10, 11, 12-year-olds in a group, typically. And then on a different night of the week, we'll do caregivers, because you don't need to do it all at the same time.
Right, because they're not driving them there.
Exactly, yes.
That is one of the things that I remember also very distinctly when I went through the program, was the overnights were with their caregivers offsite. Yep. And then coming back the next day with having stories about how they did play because that was what they were designed to do. Go play, whether it go swim.
Yeah, that was their homework. Go play.
Yes. And do it with your family, you know, and then they'd come back and talk about how that was. So it's very rich that it gave the family, and that was also encouraged, while your youngsters are here, go check out some meetings. Here's a list of options in the area, you know? Again, just a holistic approach to resources for everyone in the family was one of the profound experiences of witnessing that. It was a very well-designed and inclusive program.
Yeah, thank you.
So I know you have story upon story that are amazing about your experience with children. And you get to watch them grow up and hear back from them. And is there one or two that you'd want to share before we close, just so people can hear the hope of what the power of implementing some of these wonderful resources and tools to children can create for them and their family?
Yeah, let me tell you one. And there are plenty, but let me tell you one that's more current.
Great.
Something that happened just in the last month that really knocked my socks off, because children are the best teachers. And if I'm just open and humble and willing to listen, boy, can they guide me in a lot of different ways. And so there was a kid that went through our school program. And again, I don't want to complicate this for the listeners, but
sure.
We also do school-based programs. We do virtual school programs.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Go to where the kids are. Don't wait for them to come to us. That's Mrs. Ford's motto so often. I could hear her. And so there was a kid who came through the two-day virtual. And again, it's 6 hours. We're used to working a lot longer, but you can still build relationships even in a virtual space, and kids will still get emotional and open up. And there was this one little kid who really related to Beamer and Beamer learning that his parents' addiction was not his fault. And you could just look at this guy, this little guy, 9 years old. And you could see that he wasn't buying it. He wasn't believing it. You could just see it on his face. And so he goes through the second day of, you know, our virtual children's program, and you could see it again. You could just see it. And so I got permission to talk to him. I talked to grandma who had signed him up, and I just need to spend a few minutes. And what he said, are you positive that it's not my fault? Are you positive that it's not my fault, that I didn't do anything wrong, that I'm not a bad kid?
No.
I said, absolutely positive that that's true. And he takes this big, deep breath, Maggie, and he sighs. And he says, I was convinced it was my fault, because when mom started drinking again, Dad sent me to grandma's to live there. He was still there. And he said, and what I thought was, if I leave mom and stop stressing her out, maybe she would get better. And it was just a powerful lesson to me, again, the importance of explaining things to children.
Right.
And you know, when talking to dad, two or three days later and saying, hey, I love how you sent him to grandma's where he would be safe.
Right.
And him to not watch all of the, you know, destructive dancing that you and your wife and her disease were doing. But you got to explain it to help him understand. I sent you there to be safe, not because I thought it was your fault. And so just an example of just,
yes,
but powerful.
Yeah.
What he had told himself, for it all to make sense.
Do you think that is one of the biggest things children struggle with, believing it is their fault out of all of the aspects? Is that one of the most?
It's one of them. You know, I think it's one of them. I think, too, it's that I'm not alone.
Mm.
Because I think so many kids, I mean, we're talking about almost one out of every three kids in America love someone in their family who has a substance use disorder. And the sad irony is so many of those kids think they're the only one.
Right.
I always think, and because my mind is incredibly simple, And so I always think in threes. So if I could only tell you a couple of things, it's not your fault and you're not alone. But then I want to give you a piece of the solution and that there are safe people and safe places that can help you. And therein lies the hope. No matter how old we are, when we hear those words for the first time.
And even though it is absolutely beautifully true for children and what they need, so does everyone in the family with this illness.
Yep, you got it.
Oh, Jerry, you inevitably make me cry.
I make myself cry.
Every time I'm with you. But you know what? I love that about you, because one of the things that you've shown me as a professional in the field, with the level of passion you still have, and I don't doubt always will have, is that you can express your feelings.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that it's okay as the professional in the room, because I remember that in the children's program again. You know, would it be okay if I cried? Was one of the questions to the children. And they were like, yeah, it would. You know, we all have feelings. And it's just that normalization that even though we may be the professional in the room, that we are impacted and that we take care of ourselves, it's not their job, but that they have feelings and we have feelings.
Well, someone needs to model it to them.
Right.
Or how are they going to know it? They're not.
That's true. I would love to have just a few of the kids that have been touched by your program to share their experience. And I think that the reach of that, I recently read a person who went through the children's program now going into medical.
There's been a couple of med students here on campus for Summer Institute for Med Students who were graduates of the children's program. So, yeah.
It just gives me shivers, right? Like, wow.
Well, there's at least two people employed at the Betty Ford Center right now today that are graduates of the children's
program. Really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. Continuing to turn to give to others what they were given. And
absolutely. Paying it forward.
So beautiful. It is. That's what the message is with recovery, isn't it?
Most definitely.
Well, Jerry, I thank you so much.
You got it. My pleasure, Maggie. This is fun.
It was fun.
Time flew by.
It does. It always does. We could go forever.
Let's do it again.
Oh, don't tempt me. You take good care. Enjoy your day.
You too. My love to you and your family.
You too. Jerry's passion is so evident when he shares, isn't it? I picture children watching Sesame Street and hearing Carly share. And having a sense of not being alone. And that gives me the chills. I have resources for children, teens, and adults on my website, embracefamilyrecovery.com. I've also included links to the Hazelden Betty Ford Children's Program and Sesame Street in Communities to help you, parents, grandparents, guardians, find more resources. Please check out the transcription of this episode found on my website for those links and resources. I want to thank my guest for their courage and vulnerability in sharing parts of their story. Please find resources on my website, embracefamilyrecovery.com. This is Margaret Swift Thompson. Until next time, please take care of you.